Welcome to another episode of How the Rookie Director Screwed Up. I'm Scott Frank, sitting here with...
Hi, I'm Álvaro Kivilo. I was the director of photography on The Lookout.
And basically saved my bacon.
Wow.
As we're about to find out.
Okay. I forget what the first shot was. It was...
We spent a long time thinking about that first shot. It's fireflies.
Fireflies becoming... A car coming towards us, I believe.
But for a long time, it was going to be a joint being lit and turning into a firefly. Yes. Thank God we let go of that one.
Mm-hmm. This we shot out up in Canada near Winnipeg.
Just outside, about an hour or so outside.
This was outside. This shot here,
inside.
I remember, we shot inside in the studio. Actually, it was kind of a... rubber band paperclip technology. We had some kind of whirly-gig thing making the light and a bunch of guys pushing telephone poles and back in the background.
Almost on a conveyor belt going by.
Exactly.
Half this scene is inside poor man's process. Half is out here on this. It's also freezing cold, I should point out. This is supposedly spring in Winnipeg, and it was about 40 degrees. These poor kids were all freezing.
The big challenge, of course, here is that it's very flat country and it was very hard to hide lights anywhere because all the fields were muddy, so you can put the lights into the field and you had to hide them on the road somewhere. So that was a challenge.
And we had that one big light way down, the, what was it called?
The big Musco light, yeah.
And of course, these fireflies were at it later. We just shot the field. Now, that first shot that you saw, it was pretty much dawn. The light had been coming in. We had to adjust that later.
That's correct.
But all these fireflies are CGI.
And a lot of this was car-to-car footage, but some of the close-ups we did in the studio.
And, here,
and this shot, yeah, we shot in the early morning, actually,
mm-hmm.
Later in post made it look like night.
And again, car to car here, we had a little dune buggy, little rig that we shot and chased the car.
Right. That was in the studio, yeah. Just all the close-ups of our heroine. There, yeah. I forget how we got the green thing going by.
And of course, we drove the car right by that weed thresher, but we were at a good enough perspective that it looked like it went right into it.
Exactly, we only had... two cars.
And one stuntman.
And now we're into the,
take a shower.
All on a stage, this stuff.
With soap.
All of this was inside a warehouse in Winnipeg. Created part of the apartment inside the warehouse, part of the apartment in an actual location in downtown Winnipeg.
Beautifully designed by David Brisbane.
Yeah.
A nice detail that David supplied for us was he used this, what would you call it, the texture on the walls.
The spackle, the yeah.
Yeah, which gave it, even though they were white walls, it gave it some texture and some visual interest.
Now all this is back in the real apartment. The bedrooms and the bathroom were all... in one hallway, we're all on stage, and then all the kitchen and the front room was all in the actual location. And you'll also notice throughout the movie there's no green on any of the sets. We outlawed green from our color palette.
That's true.
Put on my coat.
David was very, very
strict. I did slip up, actually, on the next coming up shot. I let a bit of green sneak in there, but fortunately with the DI technology today, we were able to get rid of it.
Make it yellow.
I make it yellow. So.
First thing David noticed when he saw the footage.
Yeah.
The green out the door.
You're just doing one day, okay? No big deal.
A lot of those inserts that you see, we had a talented young man named Mark Willis, who was our B camera operator.
It's okay,
he shot a lot of those inserts while we were shooting the main unit.
And you'll see as the film goes on that stuff became increasingly important, the making the writing in his handwriting look interesting and very tough to shoot.
Exactly.
Incredibly time-consuming and tough to shoot.
It looks deceptively simple, but it's very tough to shoot.
Now, we had shot-listed a lot of this movie, and a lot of it we just sort of showed up on location, and you couldn't shot-list ahead of time. You had to see how the scene would work. And then even with our shot lists, we frequently found something new.
That's true.
This we had to shoot very early on in the film, this ice rink, because the weather started to warm up and we were going to lose the rink. It was going to start to melt. So we shot everything in the film that happens on this rink, including a rather climactic scene in the first 3 days of shooting, practically.
And as I recall, it's not an actual rink.
It was a fountain that we turned into an ice rink.
Exactly.
And after a while, it did start to melt, and the only way we could freeze it up was to shoot it with fire extinguisher, CO2.
Right.
All the grooves.
Right, right. At one point, I even remember we considered putting the actors onto plywood and using roller blades, you know, to fake some of the shots.
But pushing them around.
Yeah. It was a tough way to start the shoot, but we got through it.
This was our first day of shooting, which for me was very simple, and yet I made many mistakes, which we'll talk about.
This is, if I'm not mistaken, the very first shot we shot.
Yep.
Actually, yeah.
Yep.
At this point, maybe I should mention that this film wasn't shot on film. It was shot with the Panavision's new digital camera called the Genesis. And I remember when we got our first dailies back, this particular shot, somehow it came back extremely, extremely contrasty, which one would expect from digital. And I was very, very disappointed. And it didn't go along with all the testing that we had done, which seemed to indicate that the Genesis was far superior to most of the digital processes.
Turns out they printed it wrong.
They printed it wrong, exactly. So finally we got it beautiful. And this is a very difficult shot to do in the digital world, where we have, you know, bright sun outside with the overexposed snow, and it held the details beautifully. No,
I will. One thing that I neglected to do in this scene, which I've always regretted, is there's no really clean single of just Joe. I was so intent on making my day, finishing on time.
Right.
We even ran two cameras at once to do her coverage, and this shot and that shot are shots at the same time.
Simultaneously, exactly, yeah.
And there's always a piece of her or a piece of something in the picture, and I really regret not, for a little punctuation toward the end of this scene, not getting that. I thought, I don't need the clean because I've got that, enough of that, but...
Yeah. Well, that's one of the dangers when you shoot simultaneously with two cameras, that there's always some kind of little... And I don't quite agree with you. I think the scene is very, very strong even without it, but it would be very hard, yes, to get a perfectly clean single shooting simultaneously.
So. But we wanted the simultaneous cameras just so we could make the day, and
exactly.
I could be a good boy.
And it was good for the actors, too,
I would
imagine.
It was good for the actors. Yeah.
But, like here, it'd
right
be
here.
Nice just to be framed over
just
a bit.
Toward the end. Yeah. I was really, if I just picked up at the very end, especially when he leans back. Also, again, classic rookie mistake, and you'd think after 20 years of being on sets, I wouldn't do it, calling cut a little too soon at the end and not just letting it sit, because there was a lot of great moments that I cut off in that scene that I might have let play a little longer. There's one coming up, too, later in the movie where the same thing happens.
Here is our main exterior building location.
For the apartment.
And pretty well all of this is shot with available light, with just some minor aesthetic sort of touches at it. It felt actually pretty ridiculous to have these huge condor cranes, but with tiny little lights on top of them, because we really didn't need much light with this Genesis camera. It was very, very light sensitive.
And that exterior actually is the exterior of this apartment that we're shooting in as well.
Exactly.
There are many other locations that we're going to see later that are kind of put together with three separate locations in some cases.
Again, this apartment had a great look. Logistically, it was a bit tricky because it was on the second floor and we didn't have the wherewithal to put scaffolding up that high. So it was a bit limiting, but I think we...
Tricky with the lighting in this.
Yeah.
Very tricky lighting the second floor, and we had later on in the film, especially in a scene at night between Jeff and I, that became a little more frustrating.
Yes, it's something that, you know, on stage you could control much better, and also because this was a real location, you know, ultimately the sun does come up, and you know, we're fighting that in that scene you're talking about.
That looks green to me right there.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust this monitor. But this was shot at the in the basement of
where we shot the Center for Independent Living. We just ran downstairs and had this little set built.
Exactly.
The 1-800-Flowers set, and knocked this off. I had very little time, so I had to cover all of this in two shots, as I recall.
About a week or two. That's right.
Yeah. Otherwise, we.
And this is our intro into
your name?
Into Jeff's Lewis. Character, Lewis.
Kathy.
I like that we hear his voice first, and then you.
We don't see him right away.
Exactly. We spent a fair amount of time just going over the script, didn't we? Just talking about.
Well, Lar, you were on this movie for a year before we started shooting, we would have lunch once a month and sit and talk about the movie and talk about how we wanted to shoot it and what it would look like and what it wouldn't look like.
It's true. Ever since I read the script, I just so loved the script that I pursued shooting it shamelessly. I just felt I had to shoot this film because it was exactly my cup of tea.
Also completed your snow trilogy, and now you never have to make another movie in the snow.
That is correct.
Again.
Yeah, the snow, money, small town trilogy.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we were in this apartment, I think, a grand total of maybe 4 or 5 days, not very long. We had a lot to shoot here, and this was a very difficult scene. I remember Jeff in particular, it was his first night shoot, and he hadn't quite turned around to nights, and I was throwing all sorts of props at him. He had to cook without looking, and it was a really tough scene, and he just nailed it.
Right, because he'd just flown in, hadn't he?
Just flown in, and he had to stay awake and do all of this.
Reggie had us list a typical day, and kept getting stuck on it. I wake up.
We also knocked a wall out of this apartment, as I recall, between the kitchen and the dining room.
That's correct. So we could get a nice sight line from the kitchen
all
into
the
dining
down.
Room, which gave it a nice depth.
Took a piss, beat off in the shower.
But even doing that little task, pouring something in the pot without looking and making it, you know, make it look like he's not thinking about it, was very difficult. And this is about 3:30 in the morning. On his first night shoot.
Right.
And Joe's already been turned around for a week or two. We had a lot of night shoots on this movie.
Goldilocks and the Three Fucking Bears. Where's the cucumber?
Yeah, there was a lot of night, and that was one of the reasons we ended up going with this digital camera, too, wasn't it? Because we
tested this, Super 35 and anamorphic.
Anamorphic, and anamorphic looked great, but it wasn't practical for
needed
knowing
too much light.
Exactly, and knowing that we were in very small spaces and a lot of night shooting. And we both agreed that the Genesis looked the best.
And even the guy from Deluxe, the rep from Deluxe, turned to us and said, "I'm a film guy, and that looks beautiful." I remember him saying that to me.
And actually, in post-production, I remember it was the
color
confirmation.
Timer.
The color timer said, yes, that he asked us what film stock did we shoot the film on.
Yeah, I remember that moment.
I savored that one.
Bare kids, chairs all jacked up. I mean, that's it.
Yeah, nothing looks as good as anamorphic. Those blacks are beautiful, but this really ended up looking great. And we knew we wanted to shoot widescreen no matter what.
Exactly.
Because of the location.
Yeah.
The big empty vistas and shots like this one. This was day, which we made night. This was also day and no snow, which we added. This was real snow and real night.
Exactly. It's a mixture. I think this shot coming up where he drives into it, I love this shot because there's no lighting in it. This is all available light, and it's got a nice natural feel to it. Here, of course, we've lit.
And we picked this location because of that beautiful grain elevator. And this was not a bank. This was the town museum, which was just full of a lot of junk. And the building was kind of a wreck. And we gutted it and built our bank there.
Hi, Mrs. Lang.
Hi, Chris. He's in a good mood.
Oh, OK. Night. The harvest trucks go out in a week or so. That means we're going to be
very busy the next few weeks.
So here again,
we built all of this, by the way.
Built all of it, and, you know, there's a lot of, instinct would be to make everything, when you're doing a film, to make it beautiful, but here we fought all of that instinct to make it look real, to make it look believable that this is a small town bank, and I think David...
Not very busy, quiet.
Exactly. And I think David... Brisbane just nailed it in terms of...
Lots of glass inside and out, lots of reflections to deal with all the time, yeah. Which was tricky, especially when we started blowing out windows later. Very tricky.
I think we always talk about glass and reflections as kind of in a subtle way, showing his state of mind and his confusion in his everyday life.
All the images being a little fractured, that and the big isolated images outside of him by himself.
Right, right.
A good teller can go for years without being out of bounds. Mrs. Lang says she's never been out of bounds yet. But the real key to being a good teller is a friendly personality. The motto of a teller...
And sometimes I wanted to get really close. Usually, and before we started, I kept saying, I don't want to have too many close-ups. I feel like all first-time directors do everything close. And by the end of the second week, I was begging Alarda, get the camera closer.
It's always you find the right mixture. It's not a science, filmmaking. You never quite know what is going to produce the emotional response that you're looking for.
And you have a different feeling on the set too. Than sometimes your gut on the set tells you something, and then you watch it, and maybe your gut was wrong.
Yeah, that's true too.
You didn't need it, or you've overdone it. I just wanted to get in his head. I just kept wanting to get closer into his head.
Right. Well, it was a very tricky role for Joseph, I think, in that it was a very subtle thing. I mean, playing a brain-damaged fellow, it had to show in the subtleties of his performance.
Now, this next stuff that we're about to get into, this the real hockey footage, we shot actually before production started. We had about 4 hours to shoot all of this stuff in this rink. And so I had the stunt coordinator rehearsing with his two sons who were hockey players and Joe, who had been playing hockey with them, and he's doing all the skating in here that you're seeing, to rehearse. And we picked 8 or 10 shots and we just popped them off in 4 hours, one after another. And it was a great way for the crew to get comfortable too.
Exactly. It was a good way to get the machine kind of well-oiled. And also sort of a happy accident here was, if you recall earlier, we were talking about the two-shot in the cafe that was blown out by mistake. This footage was blown out by mistake too, but it looked perfect for this. So
we kept it that way.
No. I love this shot. Just the slow reveal of the bad guys, and it's not even a... It's a suggestion of bad guys. You don't really clearly see them. They're these silhouetted characters. I mean, this was all on the page. You know, this was the way Scott wrote it.
And tricky, these shots, because they can mess you up later in the cutting room when you're trying to pace your movie up and you have a very long, slow shot that you can't cut out of.
Exactly.
So I wanted to be sure that we were really able to hold that.
That is the danger with shots like that. But I love it when you can commit to something like that. Yeah.
This was an actual bar in Winnipeg that we shot at. We redressed it, we changed it, and cut it in half. It was actually goes beyond that wall with the Budweiser sign.
Exactly.
It goes back another section.
And as I recall, if in some of these reverses, you'll see there was actually at the location some of the. The furniture had kind of white dots set into the, and we used that element above the bar as well, just vaguely reminiscent of fireflies.
Yeah. And tricky with all the traffic, with Isla walking by, and we have to see her for the first time, and then he comes in. Not much time to shoot. We had 2 days here.
Exactly.
To get everything, to get a long scene between the two of them, and then a short, and then a couple other pieces of business.
And also we had to break the shooting into parts because when we were looking towards the windows, it actually had to be night because it was a real location. And then when we were looking away from the windows, then we could obviously shoot during the day.
We started during the day, and I think we started shooting this way on Joe.
Yeah.
And then as it got dark, we were able to turn around. And I remember both the actors were a little flipped out because they didn't realize it was going to be a crowded bar for the first scene.
Ah, right. Right.
And so there were all these extras everywhere, and it took them a while to get used to everybody before everybody found their rhythm. This was a really hard, hard day, a couple of days, this shooting all of this.
Sorry, how much?
$2.50.
That's not my problem. I guess I'll see you later. Okay, bye.
You need any change with that?
No, keep
it. And bar scenes are always tricky because they're, because of the nature of the bar, there are only so many angles, really, that you can find. But and I think we found a variety of them.
And there was a lot of footage shot here, and Jill Savitt, my editor, this is one of those places where she really helped find the scene and help really keep it tight, and we worked a long time on this, but I learned a lot from her. She really kept this movie paced.
And I remember, too, you know, when you have your talks before the shoot starts, you're full of all sorts of ideas. I remember we were going to, you know, cross the line, shoot it from the other side, but then the hard reality of being on set, being on a schedule hits you. And
the actors having trouble, and you need to figure out. This was tough.
So you end up, I wouldn't call it a compromise, you just end up changing your vision, I guess, you know, and sometimes usually it's for the better. You know?
And again, with this, when I first cut this scene, I kept it very tight, and I really started to like keeping both of them in frame. I just felt, except for a few moments like this, you know, I really wanted to pop back out again. And usually you start wide and you gradually move in, but in this scene I think we go wide again. And just for the kind of certain moments here and there, we stayed tight and then went back to this shot, which I really thought, A, was Matthew's best performance in that shot, and I felt like it kind of let some air out of it a little bit.
Yeah, and there's also something, by keeping both of them in there, there's almost that feeling of, you know, the spider
kind of
trapping his victim. Yeah.
Well, I call it tomatoes, lemons, and I know that's wrong.
And Matthew was great. He's got a nice balance of menace, and in this scene it was great because he's kind of wooing him in a way.
Yeah, and he was having a good time by the end of this.
You know,
once they settled in, they were both having a good time. But this two shot I really liked. I always really thought this looked great.
Sometimes you're out there and you.
It's a trick because that's a mirror. We never know it's a mirror, even when he turns around.
Right.
But no one seems to mind. It's a little tricky geography. So he was looking into the bar mirror, saw them, then turned around.
Yeah.
And then you get it all when he gets up, right here in this shot, and we follow him.
This is the shot coming up that I just love this shot for some reason. Just the
of Aaron Berg leaning over and smiling at him.
Exactly. It's a great intro into the gang, I think. It's not punched up, you know. You could have, you know, dollied into them, or, you know, made it obvious.
That smile.
Exactly. Here we did a whole series of
him coming home and looking at dinner on the table.
Exactly.
We have three of these shots in the movie, all different light, different.
Yeah.
Slightly different angle.
Just a tiny bit of camera movement. Generally, in the whole film, we kept camera movement fairly minimal.
We were always talking about tableau more than a lot of cuts.
Exactly. Once upon a time, again, probably because of the giving Joseph room to.
Giving all of them room.
Exactly.
Luckily, we had a helicopter to do stuff like this.
Yeah.
We used later. We had it. The helicopter came early to do some of the accident stuff. So we went up and just had him do some driving shots. And that, I'm really glad.
Remember that shot where he was standing by the sign?
Mm-hmm.
I remember we totally lost the light, which on film at that point would have been useless, but we just turned up the gain a bit on our digital camera. And
you cannot tell at all.
And you can't tell. And we lit it, too, I remember, just adding a light to make it look like sunset. But actually, it was night.
These are the most difficult scenes to shoot, I find. The dinner table stuff. I was more afraid of shooting this scene than any scene in the film.
I just remember,
keeping this interesting and finding, keeping myself interested while we were shooting it, keeping the actors interested while we're shooting it, while we're doing the same thing over and over again. It's torture for everybody by the end of the day.
I'd say it's hard work because the amount of people and the amount of story points to be made, there's you just have to shoot a lot of angles. And that's painstaking work, and you do have to do it over and over.
And the way we cut it to make it work was it's all from his point of view.
Right.
It's all him responding, all on him reacting to all of this stuff that's going on. And that, once we landed on that, it really, really helped me with cutting this.
Exactly.
Do you have any other old family recipes we can use them for?
And we did use two cameras on this, just to slightly alleviate our
to help us get through it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because what happens is you get so sick of what's happening, you start to abandon things, and you're not sure if you're abandoning it because it's not working, or you're abandoning it because your ear is tired.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. But this was a real location again.
Mm-hmm. And, beautiful home. That same home that you saw the exterior of was also the interior here.
If it's a gas station now, you clearly have to do some work.
I'm fucking talking about it, okay?
We kept it all tight until this one last little piece here. We'd done two masters from both sides, and this was our second master. And then I jump cut all of this just to get him in here faster again, because...
Right.
The rules of the movie allowed us to do that a little bit here and there.
Exactly.
Just because
of
him.
Well, then you better carry me.
But I tried not to do that too often.
It felt right there.
And again, this was, in some ways, it's a little heavy-handed, but we don't do any flashback. We just show this wheelchair sitting there and move on.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's in just sitting in natural light, so it's not where...
Not a big deal. And then the baby really. That stole...
Stole the scene.
I had to cut around the baby. She was so cute.
You said he went out with you a couple times?
Well, he probably did.
And here, as I recall, we couldn't control the color of the set. This was when we had to use what was really there. And I remember in post-production, we toned the blue down a bit, so it wasn't quite so.
And not a lot of room to shoot in there at all.
No.
But a Porsche Audi franchise? Oh, that'd be so tight.
What exactly do you do for the company?
The trick here was, it's a very obvious, you know, the old Chekhov thing, if you show a gun in the first act, and I really almost wanted to make a joke out of it by making it so prominent. Yet at the same time, you want it to kind of flow, and so we covered it head on, in a way, but sort of disconnected him from everybody else.
Yeah.
We did have a shot of him standing there in the room with the gun and everybody around him, and it was almost too funny.
Right.
Yeah, I think so. You're gonna lose your queen, right?
Yeah, I was happy with the look of this scene, with that kind of sort of golden burnished kind of look and the rich blacks and.
Check.
Walter Parks had come to the set, the producer, that day, and he'd worked out an entire chess game and written it down and had all the moves. And he went home, and when it came time to shoot the chess game, I'd lost the piece of paper where he'd written down.
Oh, really?
So I wasn't sure if I'd recreated the exact game.
I'm sorry.
Huh. What's good to see you?
And again, it was really important for me to connect Jeff to all of this, especially for the next scene. And this, I believe, is Poor Man's Process inside our warehouse.
That's correct. We shot this at the same time when we shot the girl in the opening.
You know,
the same day or couple of days.
And it was originally a long pan from Jeff to Joe, which I just chopped.
Right.
And again, the issues of that glass just everywhere.
Mm.
They didn't have no more jelly, so I got you a custard instead.
Thanks. You got a cold, Ted?
Oh, yeah. No wonder I don't got pneumonia, given the house is not cold enough to hang.
So here again, the challenge was, you know, the shortness of the day, because we're surrounded by windows and shooting in an actual location, although, you know, it was a set built into an actual location, I guess.
But we shot the Joe's half during the day. We tented the whole front of the bank and we'd shoot anything looking this way during the day.
Right.
A lot of the time, because we were only Again, this was all of the stuff in this bank was my third week and fourth week of shooting my first movie. Some of the most difficult stuff coming up in this bank. And we were racing. So any piece of free time. Now here we had very few extras, and I think this, we wanted the bar to feel kind of empty for this little beat and this little scene. And we had not a lot of time. We were down to our second day. And we had to do this scene, which we did in, I think, two great shots.
Right.
And then this little moment where we first meet Lovely.
Chris Pratt.
Yeah. I think that's a great introduction. Yeah. Just boom, right in.
Right off his humiliation, too, which is great.
Right.
And that little piece. But then this scene, when we first meet her, we ran out of time.
Yes,
and
I remember that.
We could only do this. We had exactly time for three setups.
That's correct.
Setup number one.
I'm answering phones. What do you do?
Setup number two.
Number two, right. And then a tighter one on Isla.
And
right,
that's it.
Three, yeah.
And I would have loved to have had her own close-up. I would love to have covered the other two playing pool in the background. I would have loved to have done a lot of things.
Yeah, but I do remember that night.
That's all we had.
And I remember it was tricky choreographing the wider shot, too, so we got just the right density of foreground extras.
And I really wanted to show her figure. She looked great.
Exactly.
And I really wanted to get a good shot of her. It's her big introduction, and she looked beautiful.
Exactly. That's what we were struggling with, that so we'd set up the shot and suddenly a foreground extra would hide her.
Exactly. Yeah, right. And another too short where I called cut too soon on Joe. He just starts to smile. I kept it in the movie anyway, even though it's the barest hint of a smile. I really, again, never thought I would use it, and another rookie lesson learned.
That's better. I've seen you play hockey, you know. Me and Alice.
This, again, was an extremely tiny location. But it had great built-in production value with this. The walls were made of leather or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it was really wild.
Yeah.
You remember that?
And we went for a much warmer look here with her.
Yeah.
I mean, I wanted to go in the opposite direction of what you would expect with a girl like this. I put her in a flannel nightgown.
Right.
We warmed up her living room, warmed up her.
Yeah.
You go and slash the hell out of some shitty player at the end of a game you already
won. I mean, this is the final step of being totally
seduced.
Seduced. Mm.
Me and Alice Watts are like, damn, it must be pretty cool to be Chris Pratt.
And this was broad daylight outside. Matthew had a good time doing this scene. He couldn't wait to do this scene, which scared me a little bit.
I love that reaction.
Her look is fantastic. Of course, you and I spent a long time lighting that scene.
That was correct.
Took a long time. I don't know why, but it took a really long time to light that scene. But there were kids outside the window here. And even, I was really tricky cutting this and mixing this because you could hear a baby crying. You could hear all kinds. It's supposed to be the middle of the night.
Right, but it was
broad
daylight.
You could hear
kids
yelling and, and bicycle bells and
woke up this.
I love that practical lamp, too. Mm-hmm. When I first saw it, I kind of cringed a bit, but I've grown to love it. There's something very odd and delightful about it.
And it's sort of blown out in a really interesting way.
Yeah.
Are you okay?
I want to see you naked. I'm sorry.
No.
She's great in the scene with all of her looks and smiles.
Hold hands.
Sorry.
And the tricky part here is the movie, you know, it's we know what it's about. We're waiting for the character to catch up to us, and it's a very slow, deliberate pace, which I always knew the film would be, and I always, that was by design, but I worried about losing the audience, and you go from this little scene, to this little scene where they're talking, it's quiet and quiet, and it's a very tricky. It gets the movie. It's very hard to keep the momentum going throughout here, and we were aware of that when we were shooting. And you can't stay in these quiet scenes for too long. At this point, yet there's a lot of information that we need. So I cut this to the bone. There was a lot more conversation going on here.
I think by this time, though, you've built up so much empathy for our lead character that you...
Hopefully.
You're with him, you know.
Hopefully.
So this again, you know, using our Genesis camera, very little, there's the background. I remember actually we didn't light it. We actually turned off a bunch of fluorescent banks and to make it more balanced. A lot of available light, which I love because it gives a real reality to it.
And this is where Jeff Daniels saves the movie a little bit. We do this shot again, which is the second time, and again, that's all about him, the repetition of his life, and yet a little of that goes a long way for an audience. But we're trying to sort of put you through that, and again, how pathetic it is. He has his dinner sitting there waiting for him every night, cooked by his roommate, his maternal roommate. But then in this little scene, Jeff just sort of takes over.
Chris? Yeah, suddenly it's a whole new tone. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You get stoned? And this is back on the stage. Now we're back in the warehouse. So we came into the apartment. The exterior was the real apartment. The first room was the real apartment. And now we're in a warehouse.
I don't really want to talk about it.
Oh, but you are.
There you can see those walls I was talking about earlier. They're, rather than having just flat white walls, there's a nice... texture to them. They caught the light beautifully.
Lewis.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, at least tell me your name.
Lovely.
And the lamp is what looked good, so when he turned on the light switch, it's actually that little table lamp that comes on, not an overhead light. Remember, we had a long discussion.
Exactly, right. Yeah.
What if people know?
Yes, sometimes you have to take that license.
Every night while you're out getting blown and God knows what else by lovely...
One could say, why did he... turn on a light at all.
At all.
Because he's blind.
Because it wasn't dark. It wasn't quite dark enough for him not to see him sitting there.
Right.
These shots I loved. The linking of these two guys and these two angles.
Yeah, I like this shot a lot. It's a simplicity. I mean, the whole film is... I think we never wanted the photography to get in the way of telling the story.
No. And also by necessity, you know, when you don't have a lot of time, you start thinking about what you really need to tell the story.
Exactly. So you sort of distill it down to its bare elements.
Gary Spargo.
And then we won the lottery when we found this location.
It's a great location.
This farmhouse is this sequence is actually three different locations, this being the first, this exterior, which is beautiful. And shown more to its advantage in scenes coming up, but it's still that paint on the outside, the peeling paint, and we did nothing to this location.
It was wonderful.
Preserve it.
If I had any regrets, though, it would be when we first scouted and took location stills of it. The fields were totally covered in snow, and it was overcast. And
we got a bright, sunny day. Anytime we wanted overcast, we got bright sun.
Exactly, but that's the law of filmmaking.
Get a good grip.
And the snow had started to patch up out in those fields a little bit.
Exactly. But
this is location number two. That location, the exterior was somewhere near the town where we shot the bank, 4 hours out of Winnipeg. This is about an hour outside of Winnipeg in a different farmhouse.
Egg rolls. I think we made too much food.
There's nine of us.
No, there's seven. You, me, Cork, Marty.
Yeah, this was a great location as well.
And this was one of those things in the script that was very loose, and I... day before had to rewrite all of this to make it specific because they were just kind of partying and talking and now that I'd been shooting for a while I realized, you know, without the specificity of what to shoot, you lose control very quickly.
Right.
So I tried to find a concept for all of this. And there's a lot of action going on and a lot of young actors, not all of whom matching.
Right.
So this was an editor's nightmare. Tons of different angles we shot through here. People getting up, he's looking around, he's looking at them, he looks at the wall. This is weird.
I love that shot.
Now you're going to see.
Also this, you know, very often smoke is put into a room to make it photographically beautiful, but in this case it just, you know, they'd all been smoking pot.
Yep.
And the blinds were down. It just felt like the right look for this place.
Pig head.
Marty?
Yes. And lots of stuff to show. We had just showed his Uncle Bone a minute ago sitting there in the other room, but didn't want to make a meal out of him just yet.
How about,
And again, Jill Savitt deserves some sort of award for finding a way to get. And then this guy shows up, and you're now wondering, whose farmhouse is this?
Yeah. And in a way, it was too, because this was almost sensory overload for Joseph's
That's
character.
What it was supposed to be.
What's wrong?
And again, for the actors, it's tough to keep the energy up and pretend to be all into eating and getting ready to eat and over again from, you know, 20 different angles, literally in this case.
Right.
And this was another way we had done. We had done a version of this same shot circling, creeping around the table, ending up on Joe.
Right.
Wasted probably a good 2-3 hours trying to do that.
It was very fancy. And then we just decided, the simple pullback.
Next day, we looked at each other and said, let's just pull away from him and call it a day.
What I love about it is that cut to the to the quiet. And I think that's one of the most beautifully lit great shots.
As I recall, you got in a little trouble for spending some time on that great.
I did. I lost my head. It was a nice great.
This is an Alarc Avilo shot, though. That is, you came up with this shot, and it's one of my favorite angles in the whole movie. I love the way it works with her and with him going down the stairs, but then racking to her in that last moment, and she's also quite good in this.
Mm-hmm.
She does a lot. Suddenly this little supporting character has this whole other life.
Right. Now this we're in the third location.
Right, which was a basement of a secondhand kind of thrift store in downtown Winnipeg that we walled up and turned into our basement because it had those walls and some ceiling features that we just loved.
Exactly. And this is where, you know, you never know where your inspiration comes from, but the set decorator, when they decorated this, they put that extremely bluish, cyan, greenish lamp in the middle, and I just love the way it separates. Mm-hmm. Gives sort of a Matthew, his little command station.
Everybody had their own little room.
Exactly,
within
the room. This I remember, we spent a lot of time blocking the whole scene.
Instead of shooting, we showed up on set, and we shut down the set for almost 2 hours to rehearse, knowing it would buy us a lot of time later.
Yeah.
And because Matthew had a long monologue to do.
He had a huge monologue.
And it was just you and me and the actors for a long time, much to the chagrin of many folks. And we figured it out, and then we brought everybody in later. And again, because he was... Everybody knew what they were doing by this point. We were able to move very quickly through this scene.
Exactly.
There's a lot of coverage that has to be done.
Yeah.
From little pieces like those two on the couch to this is its own individual scene over here by the bulletin board.
Mm-hmm. As I recall, we actually shot a full master that took in the whole scene.
Took in the whole thing.
And Matthew was great in that he just kept going for the whole thing.
He was able to do it.
Yeah.
Empty place.
But sometimes it's very often worth doing that, just taking a deep breath and just getting a clear direction and then just tackling.
Because this was one of those things we had not shot listed together. We needed to figure out on the day.
Exactly.
And then again, he's there in their own little room. He's in his little spot over here. And that's a whole other area over there.
It's a nice play between the gold and you know, not to get too philosophical about it, but there is that play of cold and warm, and he is right now, he's teetering, you know, whether he, I mean, he's just found out.
And they painted all of that this way. David Brisbane really was aware of what was happening here.
Yeah.
And spent a long time figuring out what that bulletin board would look like and what was on it, tried all different kinds of things before we really arrived at that.
In a way, that's the challenge, to make it appear lifelike and real on the screen, but you know that every element that you see has actually been thought out and been done on purpose.
Again, those close-ups there, again, in this scene, I wanted to be careful what we did.
Money has the power. You might want to jot that down.
Because now it's all about just these two guys, particularly Matthew for the beginning of this.
Yeah. This is... In a way, it's the bar scene, but ramped up, you know, a couple degrees, you know. It's the next level.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you go to the ATM, what, 2-3 times a week?
Three
times, wow.
And that was great that he's actually just lit with that actual practical.
That fluorescent
we
light.
Just put some white paper underneath and it bounced up and it just looks so perfect on it.
Again, because of this camera, able to do a lot of that.
That helped a lot too, yeah.
You pay money to take care of you. You won't give me enough money to take care of yourself. You know why not?
And what happens is it starts here, and when he gets up like this, then we're back into this was part of the master.
Part of the master, exactly.
Because of farmers, Chris. You know, you start.
And then this becomes a whole other little scene with its own set of coverage. So there are three different parts to this scene.
And here, if I'm not
actually four with him coming down the stairs
right?
being the first part.
If I'm not mistaken, here we made the conscious decision too to shoot clean shots of each, not to combine them together.
Yes.
That it's you know it's so you feel the tension between them.
Yep.
You know.
Tell me you want to start a business.
And again, I think here we also weren't, we didn't start moving the camera even until the very end. We might have done some pushing in.
Right, yeah. Yeah, if there was any movement in the master, it was just basically to follow the action, but not anything to
punctuation necessarily.
Exactly.
And there we're kind of moving in
there
a little bit.
There we're starting to.
And again, a tool I started to overuse toward the end of the show, I remember a lot of you saying, do we really want to push in?
I mean, push-ins are great, but again, yeah. Like anything, you can overdo.
And then they lose any power or impact.
Right. Here, I think it works great, though, because he's processing all of this, and it's hitting home.
And this is the end of that push-in shot, where it's like really close to him.
Yeah.
Whoever has the money has the power.
This was shot at the end of a very long day, and I was convinced it was never going to make it into the movie because you had to light it really fast.
Very quickly. I'd spent all my time on the radiator. So.
Yeah. And stairwells are tough.
Stairwells are very hard. But
it worked.
I like this shot, or these series of shots.
And this wasn't even designed to have this happen, but we... Mm-hmm. We're able to use the tail end of it. And then one of my favorite shots, this little piece, where we did have at least a semi-decent sky for this.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, that's a good moment.
And I held this a long time, and sometimes I wish I'd cut before he looked at her. I go back and forth about that. And then we go to this weird tilt down, this whole other world.
Totally different world.
But it's all about whoever has the money has the power.
Exactly.
You know.
I remember at one point you actually were even considering cutting right from the farmhouse.
From Gary
right,
saying that to this, losing
right,
the
exactly.
exterior shot, losing them in the window, yeah. losing. But then I thought...
I'm glad you didn't, though.
No. I thought it's a thriller, and you need the moment of him with her. You need...
Yeah.
You lost a lot of atmosphere as a result of that. You gained a lot of pace, but I felt that you really lost something else.
Yeah.
Also, I was thinking about that because I was worried the stairwell wasn't going to work.
Right, right. 30,000 seems a little low, boy. And this, again, is a different tone now.
Mm-hmm.
So
we keep coming back to this whenever we come back to Jeff.
This, I remember always cracking up.
And
this
Joe's
scene.
Face, just sort of, what am I doing here? And we describe the sequence every time Joe and I would talk about any scene after the farmhouse. Is my life tastes like chalk, basically.
Right.
Everything that before seemed okay now seems terrible to him.
Right.
Uncomfortable.
We don't have to call it that.
Yeah, I got lots of ideas.
You know, aside from that Reuben hiccup, I think it went pretty well.
Again, more you realize how much we shot in this location on this ice rink in three short days.
I don't know if you noticed.
Was it only 3 days for the whole thing?
3 days.
Wow.
And we couldn't always stop traffic, which made it really interesting sound-wise.
Right. This is basically the Winnipeg Public Library.
Yep.
What
you can tell me are three organizational strategies.
It's a great set that we show more in the opening scene with this set, but David did a great job. This was a completely vacant, empty office space.
And
Repetition. Very good.
And again, revisiting earlier shots, but
and that's
but
why
making them a bit more intense now.
Exactly, and you hear the instructor saying, ritual, pattern, repetition. That's how we organize our lives while he's in the middle of this. I think this was the shot where we were out of light.
Exactly.
Alex Borstein, the actress who plays Mrs. Lang, my next-door neighbor in Pasadena, did me a big favor. Her great face.
Oh, she's wonderful.
Well, technically, I don't know that I'm a pussy whip per se, but she got me in a goddamn pager in case she breaks water or whatever while I'm on my shift.
And none of this was supposed to be beautiful. We really were. This is all just mundane.
Exactly.
This is his life.
Now, all those paintings we see in the background, those were our storyboard artists.
Yeah, he painted all those Western paintings.
Yeah.
And then this was the second time in the movie that I did a little bit of jump cutting. And again, not so as you'd notice, just so to get to something a little quicker.
I love this shot here. I can't explain why, but there's something so lonely and lonely about it.
Mm-hmm.
Is he all right or something happened?
Tell her I'm all right.
He's fine. You all right? You sure?
Yeah, Dad, I'm fine.
And a lot of people have asked about that cross and the symbolism of it, and you know, it means nothing other than it looked really cool. And when you took that photograph of the location, I remember seeing it reflected in the window and both of us going, well, that'll be fun.
Exactly.
But now...
Yeah, I guess it's...
I'm worried people will think it's some sort of pretentious...
some kind of symbol, yeah. It was just the location actually
it was there. It was a good shade of red, is the
way. I just think you should come. I guess that's the problem if it's something like a cross. But
and then in here, especially as it starts to resolve in the background, and there's a couple times, and then we use it later just to show you where we are later after the robbery.
Well, that was kind of a part of it. It was a very quick read in placing us back to the location.
Right.
You know, where it's not just a building. There was that little splash of red, just kind of.
Next time, rather than a cross, I'm going to do some sort of company sign.
Exactly.
Look, Chris.
Oh yeah, that's fine. I understand.
Hey, buddy, can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
You want to come home?
What?
It's okay. You don't have to be afraid.
But there it is, and it looked great over his head. I thought it was really interesting to have it there in the background.
And here you can't even read that. It's, well, I guess you
not
can.
Really.
Once upon a time, I woke up. I took a shower with soap.
And all these shots, again, were lit differently because now he's feeling somewhat empowered and
going
to go rob the bank. There's a lot more light, a lot less snow for the moment.
Right.
I cased the Noel Town Bank.
And now the camera's starting to move a bit more. Everything's becoming a bit more heightened and kinetic. Yeah. I remember this scene, actually. We did a lot of coverage for a very simple scene, but I think it works
well. We
great.
Needed the rhythm.
Exactly.
We needed the movement.
Yeah.
And this, too, I wanted a lot of movement going on here.
Yeah.
Cork and I went car shopping. And then I took pictures of the vault.
At some point, we're going to have to talk about snow as I see it blowing in the background.
Exactly. Now, we did have some of our own, and then digitally we added some more. And it was so easy to add in that, in retrospect, I guess we both thought that in the future it'd just be good just to add it.
Not even make it, bother making it, because sometimes we'd make it on the day, and sometimes we added it later.
The problem with making it on the day, it, you know, then you have to clean it up, and you have to, you know, you're at the mercy of the winds. And but I think we ended up basically with a mixture.
And we had a lot of wind, too. That snow blowing that almost looks fake up in the corner is actually really being blown by the wind.
Right. And I guess this is another example of, you know, I think at one point in our very early luncheons, you know, long before we started shooting, we talked about the snow actually coming into the bank during the shootout, and we gave up on
real
that.
Real quick.
Yeah. again, reality comes home.
And this was, were we 2 days in this basement? I think we were one, maybe a day and a half, and maybe a day. Maybe we did all of this and the other scene in a day. I think we did.
Could be, yeah. After that, 2 hours of blocking. I like this close-up. And now comes the crucial line.
And this was hard for Joe. He's looking at a phalanx of lights and cameras in order to make this work. The camera's there, surrounded by a million lights. Matthew is hidden practically by all of the
exactly
the flags and things that are blocking his way and cards and so on that we had stuck in there to get that look on his face.
See, as a cinematographer, that's what you always struggle with. You know, how much do you impede the actor?
He was usually, that day. He was just starting to get a little annoyed.
Yeah. Sometimes usually you don't want to impede the actor at all, but sometimes that moment, that look, I mean, that was a crucial moment, I thought, and it was worth pressing the point. Lewis's world.
Great little Braille watch that
prop
master found. And again, we wanted this really warm. For the moment, right before everything falls apart.
Exactly. That was a struggle too. We just saw a quick shot of one of his scars. All the scars in the movie were a big challenge, and we shot a fair amount of tests on them you had to notice them, but also they couldn't be over the top, and they had to look realistic. And
the big one is buried in his hair. You see it see it in the first scene in the shower.
In the shower, yeah. Which was, I thought, a good way to reveal it, yeah.
And I'm really glad we shot that shower scene just about the last day of shooting, because I started to realize he doesn't have enough physical damage that we can see. He has scars over his back and on his neck, but they're not all readable.
Yeah.
And I decided to do the one in the shower toward the end.
I'm gonna kiss it better.
That's a nice transition.
Mm-hmm. This was one of those scenes in this where you had trouble lighting because we couldn't have scaffolding and the light was coming up very quickly and I needed it dark enough to believe that you wouldn't see him sitting there.
Exactly. This was, I'd say, of all the scenes in the whole movie, the trickiest. Exactly, because we had to have a very specific look of the lighting, but...
And the only time I had both you and my actor anxious, because you were really anxious about the light, she was really anxious about how she looked.
Right.
And rightly so. And so it was very... between the two of you, I was not getting a lot of good news that night.
Yeah. But I remember it was... because literally the sun was coming up.
Yeah.
And just to get, you know, Jeff leaning in and out of light with no scaffolding, it was tricky. But here's another example why the digital intermediate work can save your bacon. Is in the sort of wide two shot, I think there's about 6 or 7 power windows, you know, making darkening down certain areas
there was a lot of power windows in this scene, as I recall.
Exactly.
Do I look like I blew myself?
And the great thing is, and just in terms of performance, they're great in this scene. I mean, they're both really fantastic. And I like that he's a little dark here.
Mm-hmm.
I think it really works.
Well, that always makes me feel better is when you can see that there's an incredible performance happening. You know that's what people are going to be actually experiencing and watching. And
this was a scene I wasn't even going to write. I had met with Jeff, and it was something that kind of occurred to me while we were discussing the movie. It's a scene I'd always wanted or thought about but hadn't put in, and I just started riffing on what it might be. This is a scene we stole from the opening of the movie to put in, just flipped it to make it a different angle. But we'd shot it for the opening scenes, the opening sequence. There's another one coming up as well. But I never would have written this had Jeff not said to me, if you write that scene, I'll be in the movie.
Right. It's a great scene.
And this was, we had shot this for the opening sequence and used it here. flipped.
Exactly.
And darkened. Both those were darkened for night, because originally they were I wake up shots.
Right. Well, that again shows the power of editing and how you can change things
right
through your shot selection.
This train we knew was coming, and we waited for it, and when we heard it was 10 minutes away, we ran with the crew to get a shot of it.
Yeah, I believe we had one camera sort of at the ready on a piece of dolly track, and we continued shooting.
And then the other one we ran over just to get that shot, because we knew the trains went through 2-3 times a day.
And as I recall, 90% of that train had huge logos for Canadian National Railways on it.
Until we finally got a train, and it was all... That's right.
But there's that one little piece without it.
At the very end, no logo.
Sherry thought she was going into labor. Turns out it was just these weird kind of fake contractions. I don't really understand. Anyway, I wanted to stop by on our way home.
Oh, I'm fine, thanks.
Cool. See you tomorrow night.
Hey, Ted. You know, you don't always have to come by and check up on the bank.
You think I come by here to check up on the bank? I come by here to check up on you. Make sure you're okay.
Yeah, well, if I need a donut, I can get my own. I sure as shit don't need you feeling sorry for me. You know?
I know.
So in subtle ways, this we changed the look in the bank, but there wasn't too much we could do because we established it as this kind of overhead fluorescent lighting.
It did get
look.
Darker, though. We did start to darken it up a little bit
exactly.
as we got closer.
Yeah.
And then this is where we made the best use of this location.
Yeah. And this, too, was, as I recall, it kind of... evolved, and you never know what's going to make things change. But I think we had planned to shoot in one direction, but then the light changed, and as a result, we discovered all these images. And
in particular, one coming up that may be, I think, the your prettiest shot in the whole movie, which is a great shot. And that picture car was fantastic. I remember, I felt like I won the lottery the day I found that car. This is a great shot. I remember when you
good
found
reveal.
This. But right here is the best, with her red hair, the red car, and the red bar.
Well, everything came together. The lighting was, we shot it at the right time of day. You know, not that we had planned it that way.
No.
But it happened that way, and it was beautiful. But that picture car is incredible. It has so much character. And again, it's a fine line where you can push it and it comes, you know, a neat, funky kind of thing. But this, it felt organic.
Everybody on the crew wanted to buy that car by the end of the show.
Teriyaki burger. I tell you what, Chris, we have our place. No menus. Server just comes up.
Jeff Daniels was incredible in how helpful he was with, you know, shooting somebody wearing sunglasses, you see every light you're using.
He's very conscious of reflections.
He was very, you know, he'd say, am I okay here? Okay here? And then he'd just use those two positions, you know, and without sacrificing any performance.
You two are in trouble, I can tell.
This we had about 4 hours to shoot, this whole scene. This was a third of a day, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
We came in and did this very quickly. We've covered it very simply. I mean, there's actually a lot of angles in here. And when we were shooting, I would shoot 5 days, and then on the weekend I would come in and cut, and Jill would be cutting all week long.
Right.
And then we would work on the scenes together that she had started to cut. This scene, this is essentially her first cut of this scene. It was so tight, and I loved the way she cut it.
Yeah.
I made no changes. I just loved the way it was cut from the beginning.
I want to bone that blind guy. It looks like Larry Flint.
Larry Flint? Oh, Jesus.
Moving out.
And they're both great in this scene.
They're wonderful. It's
maybe my favorite scene between the two of them. It was also the scene Joe did for his audition.
Oh, is it?
Mm-hmm. Ah.
Sure.
I love that moment.
I don't know, but soon.
Again, you know, what a... you know, for an actor to not be able to see his eyes, but still you feel his hurt. It's amazing. It's all in the tone of his voice and his body language. And
now here, she's putting suitcases in the trunk, which we don't really see, which is going to pay off later in a mistake I make. She also used to have a bruise on her cheek, implying that Gary hit her. Lots of discussion about the bruise. I finally took it out.
Didn't the bruise go from one side to the other?
No, it was pretty consistent, right. But it was the idea of it begged too many questions. But it was helping why she was leaving, and I felt she was leaving. It was better to have her leave because she was ready to go, and she fully understood what was happening. And the bruise felt like too melodramatic to me. Matthew actually wanted to hit her, and we did a take of him elbowing her, which was pretty funny. But here you see her driving away, and I thought this would be the great last shot of her in the movie. Uh-huh. With this beautiful dissolve, that's her leaving. We saw her putting them, but apparently a lot of people didn't understand or see the suitcases in the trunk. And I've gotten a lot of comments on what happened to Lovely.
Okay.
There was going to be another shot that we did later that we'll talk about that I cut.
Right. But so ultimately we erased the bruise.
We erased the bruise.
I'm not a fool, Chris.
And now if you look, the bank is darker than it has been.
Yep. Yeah, it's starting to change.
And I realized you've come a long way since then.
And we added that little, surprise reveal of Mr.
Joe's fingernails that he wanted to make sure they were as fucked up as possible. Remember that discussion?
Yeah.
Oh, and don't forget to lock the door.
I'm missing one angle here. We didn't have the time. I would have gotten it when he goes. I'll show you where. We just ran out of time, and it's when he walks over to the door here. He locks the door.
Uh-huh.
And he turns around. I would have done a point of view of that bank.
Right.
And him standing there alone in the bank. I might even done something from outside for a moment.
Right.
Of him alone
right.
in the bank. But we were really up against it at this point. Again, we had I think 10 days in this little town to shoot everything, and one of those days was the farmhouse exterior.
Right.
So we had 9 days to get everything in the bank, including the robbery and the shootout.
Right.
Either of which could have taken 9 days.
I'm not at home. I'm at the bank.
It's a great face.
One of the nicest guys ever.
Yeah.
Look, I can't do this. You guys do whatever you want. I won't say anything, but
it's
not
going to
do it.
We spent a lot of time talking about the film and then going over the script, but the one sequence that we actually storyboarded...
Two sequences.
Yeah.
The accident.
One is coming up with the bank robbery, with the shootout. Yeah.
Because we knew we'd have no time and we couldn't improvise at all, really.
And we actually taped it out on the studio floor and with the actors, videotaped it and...
Yeah. Had furniture in there, and we rehearsed it over and over and over again a couple of weeks before shooting. Used to be, I remember we reshot all of that because I wanted him taking a bong hit before he lit the torch.
Yes.
My editor talked me out of that shot. That went by along with the, I don't know what all the pot references are.
Was the main reason that it was a new element, or it just slowed down?
Slowed down.
Right, because now
we're
moving.
Enough.
Right.
Yeah. But I thought it was funny. You think he's going to be, you know, doing something technical, and he takes a bong hit instead with the gloves on.
Right.
Total movie cheat shot. The cop driving by a car right there.
Right.
But he doesn't look. You know, we reblocked all of this. This all came about after I'd shut down shooting early one night when we tried to shoot him breaking through the plaster, and I got really frustrated and wrapped an hour or two early.
Right.
To reblock all of the geography, show where everybody is. You and I came to the bank, and we discovered that you're totally hidden when you stand up against the glass
right
there. And we came up with moving everybody around instead of having everybody bunched up around the hole. We had him sitting up on the counter, Matthew sitting up on the counter.
Right.
Everybody was spread out.
Yeah. I love this shot where...
And you cannot see him if you're...
Yeah, from the other angle, which we showed.
No,
yeah.
He's pretty well hidden. And then when he drives away, we revealed, and I know a lot of people, when they're watching the movie, I can feel them going, wait, why doesn't he see them? But when he drives away and we do that kind of point of view, you see how much wall there is there.
Exactly.
Forget it. I know you can't help it.
But I think it just underlines the tension at that point.
With him right there.
Yeah.
And it's this little move right here that really says it's completely hidden.
Right. Yeah.
And again, I wasn't really concerned with what it was like to break into a vault. I knew I could never have the time to shoot that right. I was more concerned with him, so I wanted to cut this footage in rather than seeing him.
Right.
How they were breaking in.
Right.
They just did. They did exactly what they said they were going to do. They cut a hole in the side of the vault.
Exactly.
And we really don't need to know anymore. And originally intercut with this was a series of cutaways to his family and Lewis, and
right.
I pulled those out because it also felt like, let's go.
Right, and let's stick with him.
Yeah.
This was funny. We were scouting something
across the street.
Right.
And I saw that it was a, it wasn't a donut shop, it was something, it was a Chinese food.
It was a Chinese food place, right.
And I said, what about that? Can we shoot over there? That looks perfect. And he was sitting there smoking almost exactly. And you took a photograph of it. And
I still have that still photo.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And we said, let's make that the donut shop. Again, so much headache around the hole and the shape of the hole, and I'm still not happy with it, but it doesn't matter.
It's a tricky thing too, because I think we succeeded, but there was the danger of the hole becoming, you know, comedic or,
exactly.
or you know that it's, you know.
And I'm not sure about it. Mm. Again, coverage in here, just one long shot. Joe didn't want to get up when Matthew called him over.
Yes.
So I said to Bone, I said, go get him.
Right, exactly.
And we just did it that way. Joe felt like he wouldn't just get up. And he was right, actually. It made it better to have Bone go over there and get him.
And I remember this whole sequence in here was tricky. Again, it's supposed to be dark, but you kind of have to see what's going on. But also, maybe not at this point yet, but a bit further on, it becomes very...
very tricky.
Very important moments with Joe in there.
And that exit sign, I always was the bane of my existence, because I always saw this red light in the back of every shot, and I kept saying to you, at some point, we're going to have to really reveal the geography of the back of the bank so that people know where that red light is.
Exactly. With a bit more time, I think we. Although I go back and forth on that. There's something good about the color red, but
no, I think it works. Yeah. I think it's fine. I really do.
Yeah, but I think you're right, and then actually showing the source of it. Yeah.
But again, not a lot of time for coverage in here.
Shit, cop.
And then here, starting here, we're into our storyboards.
Exactly.
From right about here. This is where it all began. We were following our boards.
Yeah.
And just checking them off one at a time.
Exactly. And I guess I think we conceived it. We sort of roughed in the storyboards. Then we videotaped
this
rehearsals.
This shot being one that we figured out during rehearsal.
Exactly. And then we discovered maybe a few other shots too. I think the close-up of Bone sort of peering around the corner,
which
is coming up.
The storyboards were all done based on videotaping the rehearsals.
Right.
We made the storyboards from that videotape.
Right. Okay. That's what it was. And that was a great way to do it, because we had our stunt coordinator, we had all the actors, and
they were actually holding on to guns, which made them get used to that, because some of them had never done that before.
That was a challenge, how much to see of Matthew and, how much to reveal. Yeah, this is the shot of Bone that that we discovered.
Oh, God.
You only had 4 chances to shoot those windows being blown out. Now here, we can talk about the only glitch that we had with the Genesis camera and the whole show. The only time it looks like video is in here.
Exactly. There's about 4 or 5 shots, and what we set the camera's shutter to 360 degrees to get those long muzzle flashes that look, you know, really effective.
And when we
effective.
Tested it, it looked great.
It looked great, but for some reason, it just made the image just a bit too sharp. And hence has a slight video quality to it, but at least it's within this kind of quick action, and
people notice it. I promised you, no one will notice. I've had
yeah,
a lot of people notice.
Yeah, so that's
sadly
that's a big lesson learned. This is a curious. This is the shot with Matthew getting up.
Mm-hmm.
Is with the 360 shutter too, and here there's that kind of video quality. But by the time it gets into the close up, it's become film-like again, which is, well, that's the. I mean, this was a brave move to go out on some. But I mean, at this point, I think Superman had been shot with this.
And Apocalypto
was shooting at the same time, so there really wasn't, you know. We kind of went out on a limb using this, but
for the most part, listen, I would use it again in a heartbeat, and it looked beautiful for the most part.
I would use it too, if for the right project, and it was definitely the right tool for this.
Yes,
this project
it really helped.
Yeah. This is again back in the studio.
All of this him driving is in the studio.
Yeah. A bunch of grips running by with tree Plans. Branches.
Now, this accident, we shot in basically one night.
One night, yes.
8 cameras, a couple IMOs on the car.
Yeah. Here we actually had some film cameras as well. Yeah.
We were supposed to have 2 helicopters. We got rained out the night before, and we only had one. One was was booked for the second night. It was supposed to be one helicopter filming the other helicopter. So the medevac would actually be in the shot. I still missed that.
Right.
And then that shot of her being blown back inside the car we did later on the warehouse, outside the warehouse stage.
Right.
We basically shot a cannon full of rubber glass at the windshield and beside her.
I think we'd done like 5 takes and it wasn't working. And finally we said, let's
put it all in there.
Pull it all in.
And they said to me, but you're going to use, we won't have another take after that. I said, I think we'll get it. Just put it all, load everything in. And she did great in that take, and Monty, the operator, also the move.
He just nailed it.
Really
yeah.
sells it great. And it's pouring rain for this shot. We got rained out right after we filmed this scene.
Yeah.
Pouring rain. Everyone's under a canopy here.
Yeah.
And you can sometimes see on the back window every now and then when it gets wet.
There's so much trouble. They all died, and it's my fault.
Easy.
They're going to kill me.
Yeah, this was again where we shot a bunch of scenes all around this one intersection.
Yeah,
and had to make them look like different places.
I just remember I was wearing so much cold weather rain gear I couldn't even move or talk to the actors.
Yeah,
looked like the Michelin Man. It was not the most comfortable evening.
Yeah, it was very cold.
This was literally across the street from where we just shot that, and you see that water he's going through. That's from the rain.
Yeah.
The snow had melted.
Again, that great car with the great glass coming up. And
what I probably would have done next time is had it all under a tarp.
And just pulled
the tarp back.
Pulled the tarp.
Right. Yeah.
But these guys weren't very bright.
No. And then here's where that cross came in handy, I thought. Just in case people didn't know where we were. I just thought that this was a great way with this shot to sort of show.
Exactly.
We're back. here, and even though the building has its own architectural character, I just thought this would be something else to...
I think it draws you in just a bit more. The other way would have been to show the full building.
Right.
And but this way, it's...
It's more interesting.
He's casing the place, yeah.
But again...
Now this shot, we shot bright sun in early morning. The light had come up, and we had to build a huge tent.
Which they built in about 10 minutes, as I
know,
recall.
They're... Yeah.
Not this, but this angle here.
Yeah, Francois, Grip, and his team were just incredible.
And again, I wanted to have time. We had a shot listed a shot from the apartment over Gary, peeking through
right.
the blinds
yes.
out.
Right.
Just ran out of time.
Yeah.
And so it's a little silly that he isn't looking out the window, but
right.
nobody ever thinks about it.
Right. So we're back to his parents' house.
And again, I would have done a shot of him stopping, looking at the Christmas tree, looking at presents under, you know, how the irony of...
That's what we had planned, as I recall, actually.
No yeah. time. We were yeah. supposed to be out of there very soon.
Yeah.
So we just got what we could, and I think that was the B camera anyway.
It was. We're back in the blue room.
Very tricky to shoot this seemingly simple little sequence and hard to cut.
A good teller's yeah. primarily a good counter.
It took a long time to figure this out, but I remember you and I spending a lot of time in that room trying to sort out how we were going to shoot it, and it was all about the flipping of the notebook pages.
I just like the sense of him sort of hovering in the corner, kind of trapped,
mm-hmm.
you know. And shooting through his wheelchair, you know.
Start at the end.
It's subtle, but it gave it something.
Now, I always knew this was a pivotal point in the movie, but it was also supposed to be funny.
Right.
Nobody ever laughs at this but me. It was both a payoff, but I also thought there was something kind of comedic about it as well when he writes, kill Gary.
Right,
kill,
right.
Kill Bone first.
Right, right.
I love this little move, bumpy as it is. I was like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. I actually think the bumpiness actually adds to it
yeah.
in this case. Otherwise, it might have been too slick.
Again, I remember we were shooting this almost as fast as he's
yeah.
doing that. It was very difficult yeah. for him to unzip those bags. And
yeah. And also, we were a bit limited by the ceiling height there. It would
mm-hmm.
have been great to be a bit higher and push in faster. But
yeah. We could only go so high.
Exactly. It was a real place.
Now, this was the most takes of any shot, trying to get that damn shoelace.
11 takes, I believe.
Yeah.
And we used the 11th.
And we used the 11th, and yeah. then I had to optically push in on it anyway.
Right. Which I think we had planned.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now the apartment, you know, it's a whole different look.
Very early morning.
In fact, the whole film has a different look. We're much cooler.
Oh, that's over an hour away. Okay, now where the fuck are you? And where's the money?
I'm going to pick up Lewis. And once I know we're safe, I'll call you and tell you where the money's at.
Just in terms of acting, this was a great moment.
Mm-hmm.
This was very early in the show. I had to shoot all of the stuff that we shot out on that ice field week two.
Right.
End of week one, week two. Again, the most intense scenes in the movie in the first 3 weeks. And but he did all of what you're seeing with Joe is take one. We did
yeah.
more takes, but
yeah.
I used take one for everything.
Yeah. And I remember the visual concept here was, too, that the camera would... Actually, you barely see it moving, but it's slowly revealing that he's actually not
right.
in a black void, but in some environment where there's a bit of snow. You don't
exactly.
really know where it is.
Exactly.
Until... Boom.
And then it's that road sign, and we suddenly, know we're back.
Exactly, where he's been standing
and
before.
And the gift of gods, yes. Of the gods, of the fog that morning.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah. By now, I hope everyone can appreciate that I really had nothing to do with the beautiful visual here. This movie.
This one, this one we went way up high on.
Building across the
street. Building across the street, yeah, some kind of government building. I like this. This location was tricky again because it was so wide open and it was natural light dependent.
And we had bright light. We had really bright light, and we had traffic.
And we couldn't really control it. You know, I could help it along a bit in post production, but. And the feeling had to be of sort of early morning before the town is awake. And here was this fine balance too of you know, playing it for reality, but I like that shot. It just feels slightly unreal.
Also, it was pitch black and we shot that with the camera. We were able to kind of go. It was really dark. The sun had gone down.
In fact, in the original footage, we actually panned back to him, and I remember lighting that with the camera assistant's flashlight.
Yeah, because revealing him.
Yeah.
And
we were finally gonna get up your nerve to come and say
hello. Yeah, I wanted to. And we lost a camera this day. One of them broke. This was day five of our first week, I think, and then one of them.
And this is where we're up on the fourth floor or something like that. And all of Joe's close-ups were done at night. And Francois Arquis grip with a technique he had picked up somewhere in the jungles of South America took this huge slingshot and fired up these strings up into the structure and then pulled up a white cloth that we could bounce the light into to make it look like daylight.
Right, because we'd lost all of our light that night.
Yeah, her side was natural light, his side was lit.
Now, again, this was day three, all of this. This whole scene was day three of my first film.
Right, yes.
And this was day one for Matthew Good right there.
Right,
his first day was to play Gutshot and Bleeding. My third day was to do all of this. It was a tough day, and we had bright sun, and we had cars going by.
This was one of those locations I remember going out to for all the location scouts for, you know, taking my stills and then little video clips, and it was always overcast. But sure enough, on the day of shooting, it wasn't, you know. You want to kill me? You got to kill Bone first. But again, I think the actors...
They were great.
They were so great that any kind of little lighting niggle you don't notice because you're with them at this point.
And he, for his first day...
Oh.
It was amazing to get to this point right away.
Yeah.
And I think it gave him a lot of confidence, too, for the rest of the shoot.
Right, yeah.
You don't remember.
Joseph's incredible here, too. Love this shot.
And it was cold, and I remember I was hanging on for dear life.
It was cold, and it was tricky elements again because on ice again could very easily have become comedic, you know, with a bunch of guys slipping all over the ice.
And we had talked about this being messy. Luckily,
right.
We had talked about doing this handheld with a couple of cameras and just catching whatever we catch. Yeah.
And I think that was a good call.
Made it difficult in the cutting room. But you know what? It was that kind of scene where you could you could jump around.
I think it gave it some energy and some.
Because it was we were going to go straight from that to this very slow.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the same day as the fog day.
Exactly.
And we had the fog for a couple hours, and we did the phone call. We decided the phone call was the most important thing to have for the fog. It burned off, and.
And also, it was...
This is, by the way, back at the warehouse, this angle, because we ran out of time to get that angle.
Right. And part of it, too, we had a specific piece of equipment, the techno crane, which, again, we could only afford for for one day, I guess it was.
And I had to really resist using it for every shot.
Right.
And we were pretty good about toys on this movie. I didn't want any Steadicam. I really wanted it to be very classically shot.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot of what appealed to me about the script was that it kind of harked back to those great movies of the 70s, that sort of that it's a character piece
just
set within a genre, and very simple. Not,
but I also knew I didn't have the chops to reinvent the aesthetic on my first film, you know, and I really thought that not only did the material suggest it, but it would be a better target for me to hit.
Right, exactly.
Now here, I wish, again, we ran out of time. I would have loved an insert of him reading the notebook of what it says in the notebook.
Right.
But we just, because I would have wanted it in that environment. And
exactly.
From inside the car or from, I would have done something interesting there. And
right.
I really, it breaks my heart every time I see this, that I don't have that shot. And this, there's a lot of coverage in here. We have this little, just this little drama between the two of them was two or three different shots, and so many different angles, and
again, just tricky from the technical point of view because we're wide open spaces, and you pretty well had to just embrace what you got.
And it started to rain later as well. Right around here, it was raining.
We got everything there.
And. Very tricky, and we had shot listed this, and then but we realized we were a little light in some places, and almost every instance for every little mini scene around here, we were lighting shots.
Yeah.
This was a lake in the background eventually.
Exactly.
We added snow, not here, because it had been raining and the snow had been melting.
Well, we literally shot in that direction one day, and the next day it was a lake.
Of course. The first day we shot with that bag,
it
didn't work quite right.
Right, yeah.
It was a little tiny hole the size of a marble.
Exactly.
I also wish I'd covered that once, not that I would have used it, but just once with him just getting the shotgun out of the bag. I don't know why we didn't do one.
Didn't we? We never did?
No.
Ah, I remember talking.
A lot of faith.
I remember talk about that, yeah.
Now here, that snow in the background is all computer. That was a lake complete with waves. It was so windy.
Exactly. The wind was blowing the water.
It was so windy back there, so we...
And this, too, we had pretty well lost the light. And it was, it was
raining.
It was raining.
Even see drops here and there hitting the little puddles in front there.
Yeah. This was a very miserable day. A nerve-wracking day.
And also here, I wasn't sure I wanted him to die in the scene, or you don't know what happens to him. Matthew chose to basically keep his eyes open, and it was so great. And I robbed the Knoll Town Bank. Another classic example of no time. We wanted to shoot inside the bank. You only see Joe from behind here.
Yeah.
We needed to figure out to have its own little drama inside. We had time for one shot.
Yeah.
So that was it. So basically just a slow pan across the front. And these are treated images to create the security camera. But here is where I would have inserted. We had a shot of Joe said in voiceover, "I don't know what happened to Lovely. I never heard from her again." And we had a beautiful shot of her on a bus.
On the bus, right.
But
with
I just
the
felt,
snow.
With the snow. But I just felt the cab, the bus, you know.
Right.
Didn't we already say that with the suitcases?
Right.
But apparently not. Also here, we shot this in 2 hours.
Yeah.
And no coverage of Jeff here. He was always tied to another shot, which I couldn't use.
Yeah.
So you don't even see Jeff working in his own restaurant.
Yeah.
We had to go so fast.
Yeah.
Not as good as I used to be, but I'm okay. Not to mention that we went back and took an extra half a day to reshoot this while we were shooting all the ice rink stuff in those 3 days because I wasn't happy with what I was getting.
Right. Yeah, the whole ice rink end was, I remember we struggled with that.
Tricky.
With many, many different approaches.
Until then. And a lot of people didn't know that she was in a dream, so I added that shot of her and added the voiceover to explain. I changed it a little bit. So many people were, test audiences were, was she real or was she a dream?
Right, right.
And I always didn't care if you knew one way or the other.
Right.
That's my favorite shot, those two walking off. I guess I'll
just have to work. Well, there's something so nice about the two of them.
And then that's the third time he looks at camera, and final time he does it at the beginning of the movie.
Right.
And when
the
he
whole
decides
film
to
has
rob
this,
the bank.
This sort of like a pebble in the water, these concentric rings kind of feel to it. It's like repetitive. Yeah.
Well, that's our movie. I hope you all learn from my mistakes. And make sure you have a Lark of Elo with you whenever you make a film.
I know I've learned from my mistakes. That's why we keep coming back.
And I guess we're done.
Thank you.